Soundproof Podcast.
You're listening to the Soundproof Podcast with me, Miyuki Okiranta. What might a radio station sound like if it's not bound by regulation or convention? Today's show begins with a biography of an imaginary pirate radio station. A distant soundproof cousin, perhaps.
For the first 24 hours, the pirate station broadcast the sound of someone coughing nervously. An august beginning. It's not the dead air of the rural FM dial of the desertified Southwest. It's someone coughing nervously. Much nervousness at the beginning of the pirate station, and so much nervous coughing. The next Tuesday, a jazz band is convened so that jazz might be played live on the pirate station. None of these guys has ever had a lesson on his instrument. Three different kinds of jazz are discussed, but none are agreed upon. Cool jazz, smooth jazz, and Afro-Cuban jazz. The pirate station broadcasts the music of this ensemble for 6 days without ceasing. There's no agreed upon coda of the piece. The pirate station just pulls the plug. That fall, after weeks of casting about, a symphony is written by filling in notes at random on a staff. A local orchestra attempts to pick out the piece without rehearsal. However, the symphony is considered too sentimental for broadcast. A bird call program is surprisingly popular.
Robin.
With the great horned owl coming in for the most requests. These issuing from the sheriff's office. Maybe it's the lonely night patrolman of the graveyard shift.
A constipated goonie bird.
The sounds of southwestern cacti are broadcast for several weeks, though it is generally agreed that cacti make no sounds. Station branches out. It broadcasts over 12 nights a comparative study of whistles, including whistles that your high school track coach favored when he was in a bad mood, and like that guy up the street who can whistle like nobody's business. Briefly, the pirate station backpedals reluctantly and agrees to play musical recordings of the conventional sort, but only if the selections alternate in the following way: salsa, mariachi, tejana, reggae, Tuvan throat singing, toy piano concertos, music released in 1964, and songs sung by tone-deaf people. And yet these categories are considered too easy to fill. And after a week or so, the pirate station loses interest.
It was an afternoon of
issues. My grounded soldier may well remain starboard manageable as she was at one ago.
The pirate station broadcasts news programs, but never at the top of the hour, and only when bootlegged from other stations. The substance of the news in these programs is altered slightly in order to mislead. The weather is said to be sunny no matter what the weather. The stock market is said to be going down without respite. The high school football team is said to be losing. Newcomers are said to be bringing prosperity to the town. And the war is always said to be going smoothly with little loss of civilian life.
Now the reasons are too obvious and need elaboration.
Upon the return of the pirate station employees from the holidays, a period of reflection sets in. The microphone is turned on, and all the disc jockeys gather around and speak of their uncertainty about the pirate station. What could be done differently with the medium? What can the pirate station do that no one has done before? Has all hope been lost? Is complete liberty not terrifying in some fundamental way? A recording of the staff meeting is then played backwards, sped up slightly, with the harmonious conclusion first and the confusion at the end. The pirate station sends people out into the street humming with contact mics, the only requirement being that they hum songs with the word joy in the title, though not that horrible song by Three Dog Night. Inducing strangers and townspeople on the street to hum along is considered particularly exciting. At the conclusion of the program, that unpleasant man at the dollar store is persuaded to hum Frosty the Snowman, though outdoors it's spring. A contest is announced on the pirate station to find the person who has the best radio voice. This person is then tickled mercilessly on air and driven blindfolded to a distant metropolis. The sounds of people making love are broadcast for the entire month of May, rising to a crescendo of simultaneous orgasm on May the 14th. Dwindling away, as crescendos do, by the 1st of June, just in time for summer. The doors of the pirate station are thrown open and anyone is invited in. The building that houses the pirate station is demolished, and the station moves out into the rubble. Soon the pirate station begins moving, night after night, never staying in one place for more than a few hours. Interns carry the transmitter in its small red toolbox. Pirate Station becomes a condition of all possible sounds so that everything is a song and there is no commercial interruption and no fundraising drives. The people who began the Pirate Station grow old, marry, have children, make out wills, and leave the Pirate Station behind. The sound of freight trains begins to sound suspiciously like broadcasts on the pirate station. The sounds of cheerleaders goading on the local football team are definitely pre-recorded. Any music produced in the year 1964 seems to suggest the pirate station is back online and up to its old tricks. Federal authorities become obsessed with the possibility that the pirate station is continuing to broadcast, but at wattage is so meager and in places so far flung that no one at all can tune the programming. Still, this is unacceptable. The pirate station refuses to cooperate with finding the enemy. The pirate station refuses to inform on its neighbors. Pirate Station no longer takes photographs the way it did when young. The Pirate Station once thought gardening was satisfying. The Pirate Station makes its own bricks using mud from the backyard. The Pirate Station forgets the name of distant relations and people it met only recently. The Pirate Station goes off its medication. The Pirate Station quarrels and is testy about things that never used to bother it. The Pirate Station eats infrequently. pirate station loses interest in worldly things. The pirate station never calls. The pirate station imagines it can hear the music of the spheres and begins to totter down a long, narrow corridor in which many dead friends beckon to it. But just when it is about to sleep, its eternal sleep, the pirate station reconsiders and remarks that it has work yet to do.
All together, at the two, one, two, three.
Pirate Station was produced by Sherry DeLeese and Emily Boteen. The text was written by Rick Moody and read by John Lurie. The Pirate Station was originally produced for WNYC's The Next Big Thing.